You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrin.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie with a countdown toward the inauguration of Donald Trump and a look at the big issues shaping up for 2017. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, a national conversation about race, hate crimes, and politics has erupted around 4 African-American men and women facing felony charges in Chicago. They're arrested after a Facebook Live video showed them beating a white student who police said had mental health issues. The video also recorded the attackers shouting expletives about President-elect Donald Trump and about white people.
The victim is now at home with his family and is expected to recover from his injuries. The Chicago police held a press conference on the investigation yesterday. Here's a clip of Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson from yesterday's conference.
I'm pleased to announce that the investigation has concluded and charges have been approved by the Cook County State's Attorney for hate crimes, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated unlawful restraint, and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon against all 4 of the offenders in custody.
That was the Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson listing the charges of the 4 attackers that they're now facing.
The case has sparked conversations beyond Chicago and across the nation and on social media. Brian Levin joins us now to talk to us about the impact the viral video of this attack could have and about hate crime laws in general. He's a hate crime analyst and he directs the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino. Brian, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a lot of fun to be on your show, though not with respect to this topic, obviously.
Right. And talk about what it means for this case that the 4 attackers who posted themselves on video were charged with a hate crime.
Well, Wisconsin, interestingly enough, is the national leader with respect to hate crime laws, in part because your law was litigated before the United States Supreme Court back in the Wisconsin versus Mitchell case in 1993, where I actually wrote a couple of briefs. In any event, the hate crime designation actually does not significantly increase the penalty in this case because there's a kidnapping and an aggravated battery charge already in there. So depending on how this thrashes out under Illinois law, where you have to have an underlying crime, so similar to Wisconsin, we have what's called a penalty enhancer. So in this case, the underlying crimes are so significant that we're talking about possible decades in prison.
Right. So in that case, the hate crime charge may not add that much to the punishment. In some other cases, if it was a lesser assault without this kind of kidnapping charge, can hate crimes make a bigger difference in terms of a prison sentence?
Yes, absolutely. And that's where we see the most impact. In fact, in most instances, hate crime offenses are not actually charged, even though the case seemed like a hate crime and was even labeled as one for data collection purposes, because the Supreme Court has held in another case called Apprendi out of New Jersey that a jury or judge must find beyond a reasonable doubt the bias selection. So with regard to Wisconsin's law, the law actually says the intentional selection of a victim because of various status characteristics. Illinois says that as well. Their language is a little different. Illinois' hate crime law talks about if that bias is a motive, but it can be a motive in combination with others as well that need not be hate motivated. And that's pretty much similar to what you have with Wisconsin. It's just not stated explicitly.
Is the term hate crime a little misleading when it comes to the law? You don't have to prove a condition of hate, an emotional state. It sounds like it's more about, as you just said, the selection of a victim based on particular defined types of bias.
Absolutely. It's the intentional selection. And indeed, one of the first cases, if not the first case, prosecuted by the federal government involved feuding Amish people who had different interpretations of the faith. So in that case, there might not have been hatred. It might have even been a dispute over what the proper philosophy should be in ritual, but nevertheless, it was prosecuted as a federal hate crime. Just so I can actually fully answer your previous question, the times where these charges make the most difference is when you're going from a high misdemeanor to a low felony, because then you can get more than a year in prison. Indeed, in Wisconsin's case, Wisconsin versus Mitchell, the fellow directed a crowd to attack a child on the basis of his race, in this case a white child, and he could have gotten 4 years. He got 2 years out of the 4 years and then an additional penalty, but he could have gotten a total of 7. So in that case, a couple of years was added to that defendant's case, and that's right out of Wisconsin. So to give you an idea, when something's a felony, it can hike the punishment for a felony, but it really makes a difference for those high misdemeanors.
Talking to Brian Levin from California State University San Bernardino about hate crimes in the aftermath of this attack that is really, sadly, gone viral, this attack in Chicago. Hate crimes charges filed along with assault and kidnapping charges against the four alleged perpetrators. We're going to call her now at 800-642-1234. Bob has a question. He's in Milwaukee. Bob, hi.
Hi, thanks. I was just wondering, because white people are not subject to the same racisms and problems that have had that people of color have experienced. Are the hate crimes differently applied, so to speak, to white people in this situation as opposed to people of color?
Bob, thanks for the call. Brian, how does that play out in law and in practice?
What a great question. And it was actually, for those of you who actually read this stuff, I hope not. But anyway, there was a Yale Law Review article over 20 years ago that stated we should only protect people who come from historically discriminated upon groups. Of course, they acknowledged that would be totally unconstitutional under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which is all persons born and naturalized in the United States are entitled to the equal protection of the laws. Interestingly enough, though, as a matter of statistical practice, African Americans remain the most targeted people for hate crime across the United States for every year that we've had data out of the FBI. Now, of course, the data it has some flaws, but I think that tells us something. Right now, about 29.5% of the attacks in 2015, as recorded by the FBI, were against African Americans. About 10.5% were against white people. And over the last decade or so, we've seen the range of anti-white attacks to be around 8 to 11%, give or take. There's sometimes about 11.3% in that range. The Anglo-white population as of 2015 in the United States is 61.3%. So you're much more likely to be attacked if you're African American, because they are about 13% of the population. But even in a descending numerical set, in other words, African Americans are being attacked less relative than they were a decade ago, they're still 29.5%, so that's more than double their representation of the population. Jews, the number one target for religious hate crimes, with about 11 or 12% in any given year, and that's declining as well. It was up last year. Muslims, this is what's interesting. Muslims have really jumped with regard to the number of attacks that they faced last year. They went from about 2.6 to 2.8% of hate crime victims, and now they're about 4.4%.
But by the law, as I understand it, it doesn't matter what race or religion you are. If that was the defining factor, if that was why you were selected for the attack, that could be called a hate crime, whether you're white or not.
Absolutely, and as it should be. Although, unfortunately, yes, we do have a terrible history with regard to racism against African Americans, but the Constitution at this point has to be colorblind because, I think, of common sense and the 14th Amendment.
Now, getting back to this case, this assault in Chicago, there's a question. It looks like the hate crime, they're not applying it because of the racial motivation, at least the racial statements videoed in this attack, but because of the disability status of the attack victim.
That's right. And, you know, we often see, like, intersecting identities. So, for instance, some states have gender listed and sexual orientation, and depending on how the attack goes, you could do one or the other. But the bottom line here is under the law in Illinois, what has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt is that bias selection took place. And you can have intersecting identities and intersecting motives. Indeed, the Illinois law explicitly references that. So the way they prosecute it, we'll see. But they could go either way on an anti-white attack or an anti-disability attack. One more quick thing, because this is public radio and you have the smartest listeners. Don't forget that you can also charge vulnerable victim statutes. Many states like California, and I believe Wisconsin does, but I would have to double check, has a vulnerable victim statute. And here in California, for instance, if you attack someone because of their disability, that can be charged under a vulnerable victim statute, which might be a little easier to prosecute because all you have to show is that the victim had that disability and therefore was vulnerable, and not prove the motive.
We're talking to Brian Levin. He's a hate crime analyst and attorney. We're looking at hate crime laws as four African Americans in Chicago face felony charges and the hate crime enhancer. A Facebook Live video showed them beating a white person with mental health issues while shouting racial slurs at him.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us what you think of the attackers being charged with a hate crime. And what do you think of hate crime laws? Do you think they're needed to deter attacks based on race, disability, gender, and other factors? Our number is 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing the conversation with hate crime analyst and attorney Brian Levin. We're talking about hate crimes and hate crime laws after four people in Chicago were charged with felonies and hate crimes after an attack broadcast live on Facebook.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Does the attack affect how you see race relations in the country today? Do you think states and the federal government should have hate crime laws in place? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We just got word that a judge has denied bail for the four alleged attackers. Brian, I want to get into the impact of video like this has on how we think of race and hate crimes in the United States. It's dramatic. Information is coming out a little at a time. False information has been added to the story as it's spread online. What are your thoughts on that?
Welcome to 2017. I think one of the interesting aspects of this is the social media component all the way around. Let's step back a second. About 48.5% of hate crimes are committed by the ones where we know the offenders are committed by white people, and about 24% are committed by African Americans. African Americans are 13% of the population, and Anglo whites are 61%. But let me step back. That's only criminal data. One of the things that we've seen, and this has taken place across racial and ideological lines, and this is, I think, a big headline, and that is intergroup conflict today is not just occurring under the traditional lines that we've seen, black and white, et cetera, et cetera. L.A. County, for instance, 90% of the racial hate crimes are by and between people of color. So as America diversifies, so too do hate offenders. There was a string of swastikas across Long Island, New York recently, and it was done by a South Asian person. So we're really seeing a democratization of hate. And I think part of this is due to social media, because methods now don't just get contained to one part of the web or one ideology. So the coarseness that exists in society has jumped over fire lines across all different groups, unfortunately.
I want to talk about the intent of hate crime legislation, Brian. As I understand it, it is in part to say certain crimes are trying to discourage certain groups from participating fully in society. And, you know, going back to the heyday of the Ku Klux Klan and lynchings of African Americans, trying to keep people from participating in the economy, to try to participate in politics and elections. Is that part of what hate crime laws are trying to prevent?
Traditionally and historically, that's exactly the case. And indeed, federal law, because of a variety of constitutional technicalities, made it such that you not only had to prove a racial or some other group-based motive, but also the interference with a particular right, such as voting or sitting on a jury. That federal law came into effect in 1968, after the civil rights struggles. But the earlier laws came about right after the Civil War. But in any event, what we saw during the 1980s were hate crime laws really get enacted as part of an overall awareness of the diversification of society, victims' rights, as well as quality of life oriented statutes. So it was a mix of civil rights, but other types of developments that were going on within the criminal justice system generally. Bottom line, though, the Supreme Court has said that discrimination is something that the government has an obligation to eradicate. And one of the ways that discrimination can be embedded is not just through bad laws or business practices where people aren't allowed to use certain facilities, but also through threats of violence. So if someone's moving into a neighborhood, for instance, or taking a job. So what hate crime laws have done has really broadened the opportunity for criminal prosecution in those cases where violence is used on the basis of group status without having to get into the details that you had spoken about eloquently just a minute or so ago, interfering with a particular right. Now, hate crime laws just look at the discriminatory selection of victims, because really when we have hate crimes, it's preventing people from fully participating in civil society.
Talking to Brian Levin from California State University, San Bernardino, talking about hate crimes and hate crime laws. We'll go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mac is with us in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'm just calling because I guess it's obvious to me that, well, the realities that Brian is speaking to, that things are more complicated than they seem. It really strikes home with me, because I think obviously we want to punish heinous crimes, and crimes are more heinous when they're committed against someone for seemingly no reason or a reason like an identity. But we want to be careful that just because we have a hammer, not everything is a nail. And with the expansion of prisons, I think hate crimes, labeling something a hate crime and putting someone in prison for longer and not acting towards reconciliation or trying to ameliorate the broad societal problems that maybe cause some of these things, and causing more problems by locking people up for longer and costing states and the government money in that sense, is something that our historically hard on crime government has been able to agree on.
Mac, thanks a lot for the call. What do you think, Brian?
What did I say before about you having the smartest listeners? People's Exhibit A. Here's the thing. I think that there's an excellent case for what your caller said. Indeed, people of color tend to be disproportionately punished in our criminal justice system. However, here's the thing. We have the moral rectitude to be able to say that these crimes pose a unique harm to civil society. And indeed, the Supreme Court has upheld these laws on that basis, that legislatures have the right to determine these conclusions. How you go about it is another thing. And I've seen hate crime victims who have reached out to offenders. A mosque in Connecticut, for instance, forgave their attacker, and he's a reformed person. So I think that's right. But I think the government should have the ability to, for these worst cases, use the hate crime laws when they're fitting. As a practical matter, most hate crimes are not prosecuted under hate crime laws. It's much more the exception rather than the rule. But I think there's something to be said for a moral statement to be made by the government and by society as to how certain types of crimes, because of their nefarious motive and their divisive effect on society, should be punished more.
Mac, I want to jump in, Brian. Yeah. Mac, thanks for the call. I want to get in one more quick call with Wes in Winona, Minnesota. Wes, hi.
Yeah, hi.
What do you think?
Well, here, for the sake of argument, I want to ask you this. Why is, and it sounds maybe silly on the surface, but why should we have to have another layer? Why should we have hate crimes? What's wrong with the code system now, the laws? I do something, say to somebody, and, beat them up, and it's, 5 years in prison. Oh, but you did it because he was black or because he was white or, something. Oh, we're going to add 2 more years, so 7. Why aren't the laws enforced in such a way that it's 7 years anyway?
Wes, thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring Brian in. This is a common argument against hate crime laws. Murder is murder. Kidnapping is kidnapping. Charge them the same way either way. As we wrap up, Brian, what do you think?
A couple of quick points. Number one, hate crimes have been demonstrated by research, and that, we put that in the U.S. Supreme Court briefs, that, and the Supreme Court has held that legislatures think that they're more likely to result in retaliatory attacks. For instance, criminologically, they're more likely to be directed against persons. When they involve assaults and batteries, they're more likely to involve hospitalization. They're harder to solve. So there are objective criminological reasons that make these crimes more risky and severe. But what I would also say is the law also looks at target and motive. Traditionally, this isn't something new. Being disorderly on an airplane is being different than being disorderly on a street corner. Assaulting a firefighter while fighting a fire is different than assaulting someone who's not. So the law makes distinctions with regard to target and motive all the time. And one of the reasons that we have hate crime laws is because oftentimes they're committed serially with escalating severities, and at the lower end, they're not being deterred.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Brian Levin. He directs the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino.